Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee. You are listening to Reading with Your Kids, an iHeartRadio Best Kids and Family Podcast Award nominee. We are so delighted that you're joining us here in Readville, Massachusetts, to celebrate the joy and love of reading together. It's our mission to bring all families closer through reading, and we are so delighted that you're joining us in our mission. Please tell all of your family and friends about the show and let them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network, and they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Amazon Music, Podcast Addict, YouTube, Audible, CastBox, Player FM, wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have a really wonderful show for you today. Three amazing guests. First up, Anissa Ramirez. She is here to celebrate Spark, Jim West Electrifying Adventures in Creating the Microphone. This really is a fun interview. I learned so much, and it's a great way to get kids interested in STEM. Next up, Zephyrus White is here to tell us all about his Recordable Book Buddy. Recordable Book Buddy. It's really fascinating. And later in the show, Casey Becker is here to celebrate I See Superheroes Everywhere. Join us right now from the beautiful state of Connecticut. Our guest is here today to celebrate this big thing that I'm talking into. Her picture book, it's called Spark, Jim West's Electrifying Adventure in Creating the Microphone. Please welcome to the show, Anissa Ramirez. Hey, Anissa, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Jed.
Delighted to have you on. You know, microphones have been part of my life forever. Mm. When I was a kid, I was that nerdy kid who would get thrown out of class because I had a lot of extra energy, and I would go down to the library where I was using a microphone to make, what was a podcast. We called it tape radio. We would just make these little talk shows and record them on cassette tapes. I then spent 40-plus years doing educational magic shows, wearing various wireless microphones, and now yapping into this thing. And I never thought about who created them. What an uncurious person I am.
No. Well, I mean, microphones have been around for a long time, and there are different versions of them. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the history of microphones, there's some names that you know, like Alexander Graham Bell. He created a microphone for his telephone. And because Thomas Edison didn't want to be bested by Alexander Graham Bell, he came up with a microphone too. And so those are some names that you might know. And then there's other names. But the most recent version of the microphone that we're using today that's making this podcast possible was co-created by Jim West.
What is different about his microphone compared to what Edison and Bell created?
Well, you wouldn't want to use Alexander Graham Bell's microphone on a wall because it had acid in it. So that's not going to work. It had part of its chemical system had an acid bowl, and so it could only be used on tabletops. And then Thomas Edison had a microphone that was very, very popular and used for a long, long time. It had a carbon button inside, so when you spoke into it, you pushed that button in and out, and that is how sound was registered.
I used one of those before. When I was a kid, I remember because I would take things apart.
Okay.
And I remember taking apart a microphone, seeing that little thing, and thinking, I wonder what this is, and banging it and probably broke it.
Yeah. Well, that was Thomas Edison's invention. But one of the downsides of that is that it needed a huge battery to work. So it could be, you know, if you had a telephone, the battery would be not too far away from it. So if you needed a microphone for something like a hearing aid, you would have to carry a very large battery for it to work. And so that wasn't going to be useful. But what Jim West found was this very, very strange material that removed the need for that battery. the material had its own charge. The battery used to create charge for the microphone, but the material doesn't need that. And so now it can be miniaturized, so you can put it inside of your ear as a hearing aid. You can make tiny microphones that are smaller than a button. All this was made possible because he curiously found this strange material that removed the need for a battery.
Are you able to share that strange material, or is that a cliffhanger we don't want to
spoil? Oh, no, it's not a cliffhanger, but it's got a weird name. It's called an electret. It's a very weird sounding name, but we are familiar with electret. So long ago, when my mom used to pack my sandwich, she would wrap it in saran wrap. Mm-hmm. Saran wrap is an electret, the early version of it. It stores charge. The reason why it clings is that it's given charge. And so an electret is a material that holds charge and doesn't get rid of it. So saran wrap is an example of it.
This is fascinating, and I'm just thinking, here we've only been chatting for a couple of minutes, and we've already hit on a bunch of different subjects that I think a lot of kids who may not think that they're interested in science could really change their mind and go, dude, no, I think maybe science is something I want to check out.
Yeah, well, you already have that mindset. You were talking about taking things apart, mm-hmm. and that's what Jim West did. He took a lot of things apart. In fact, he took apart some things that were actually kind of dangerous. But because he was so curious, that didn't deter him from continuing to take things apart. So if kids take things apart, then they have the makings of being a future Jim West. And if they're curious and they ask lots of questions and they keep asking questions until they're satisfied, well, then they have the makings of a Jim West too.
That's incredible. I used to take things apart, but I wouldn't be able to put them back together again. I had a motorcycle when I was a kid, and the handlebar cracked. And I said, how am I going to do this? And the guy at the motorcycle shop said, oh, it's really easy. You just take this thing off. But he didn't tell me there are all these wires going through the handlebar.
Oh, dear.
All this. And he didn't tell me how to. And so I thought, well, I know how to cut a wire and solder it back together. But
No. Didn't work. No,
exactly. No.
Yeah.
That cost me a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I'm good at taking things apart and having little extra pieces afterwards, especially if it's like IKEA furniture. I'm like, oh, I've got some extra screws here. I don't know if you should sit in that chair.
You are a scientist and a science evangelist. I love that. Talk a little bit about being a science evangelist, please.
Well, a scientist means that I've got the goods. I've studied and worked in laboratories for a long time. But, when I was teaching science classes, I realized that there were a lot of students that seemed to be missing. And so I felt like it was my job to go back and get them. So I entered a career where I call being a science evangelist, where I'm essentially just trying to convince everyone that science is for them. They don't necessarily need to become a scientist, but I want them to just have a better relationship with science. You know, as we talked about moments ago, taking things apart, being curious about the world, all these things are the makings of a scientist. And we start off as scientists. We ask lots of questions. Our hands are filthy. This is what scientists do. We ask lots of questions. So this mode of being a science evangelist started off as creating videos, science videos, but now I'm in the business of writing books, and particularly children's books.
Yeah. That's a lot of people would sit back and say, well, that's kind of a big leap going from the lab to the typewriter or the pen, and especially when you're talking about picture books. Where did that inspiration come from?
Oh, that's a good question. So I've always been wanting to share science with people. So when you're a scientist, your main goal is to write papers. Hey, I found something. It's really cool. And this happens. And I'm the first to see it, but I want to share that with you. So that's what these scientific articles are all about. And that was my favorite part of doing science, not necessarily being in the laboratory, but finding something new so that I can write about it. Mm-hmm. So the leap to writing for a different population, a different audience, doesn't seem that huge to me. It's still the same muscle of wanting to share science with other people.
I'm imagining that writing picture books would be a lot more fun than writing a peer-reviewed report.
hopefully you have a bigger audience. I find that children's picture books particularly science books are to be very challenging. See, mm-hmm. if I'm writing for other scientists, I can use big words and jargon. And even if I'm not really clear about something or confident about something, I can hide behind jargon, you know, okay. this. But if I'm writing for children, you can't do that. You mm-hmm. have to distill the science as well as you can so that the youngest minds can understand it. So I find it's a beautiful challenge.
You know, I saw on your website that you started your career as a scientist at Bell Labs. My dad worked for the phone company way back in the day. And so while he was not a scientist at Bell Labs, we got the little monthly magazines that I guess all Bell employees got. And there were some really cool things that were created down at Bell Labs, more than just telephones. I remember the first thing that fascinated me was the softball that people with visual impairments could use to play softball. I had like a little bell.
Wow. Yeah.
Thing in it.
Well, I mean, if you're the phone company, you've got to make everything to make it possible so that two people can talk to each other. So mm-hmm. you've got to make the wire, you've got to make the phone, but also the mission of Bell Labs when Alexander Graham Bell started it is that he wanted to make sure that he made technologies for the deaf. So that became part of the DNA of Bell Laboratories, too. So it makes sense that they had something so that people of all abilities can enjoy sports. But yeah. I found that at Bell Labs, there were people working on everything. And you would say, why do you need to do that? But because it's part of the telephone system. You mm-hmm. need to figure out how to make optical fiber, how to make thin threads of glass and make miles and miles of it because it's going to go underwater. So you need to know about how things are going to survive in the ocean. So people are studying the ocean. Why? Because that's part of the telephone system. So I found it to be a fascinating place.
I guess, yeah. Is does Bell Labs still exist?
Bell Labs is now part of Nokia, but it's a little different than the Bell Labs that we might know, you know, mm-hmm. making hardware for the telephone system. They're more on the software side, doing things with AI and quantum computing. So not as big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. You know, being curious and encouraging kids to ask questions and take things apart, I think that's so very, very important. I'm almost 100 years old, and a couple of guys I went to high school with, we got back together. It was our 50th reunion, and so we've kept together. And once a month or so, we get together to have a cup of tea or coffee and solve all the world's problems. It's amazing the solutions we've come up with. But one of my buddies, well, actually all my buddies, they know of this thing called AI. Mm. They don't use it. I use it a lot for various things here on the podcast. And mm-hmm. I tell them some of the things that I can do and some of the other things. And they're blown away to the point where they don't want to hear it anymore.
Oh, I see.
You know, No, it's too scary for me. Mm-hmm. I hope that we can give kids the opposite reaction. It's like, wow, you can do that. I wonder what I can do with this technology.
Yeah, I think that we feel averse to science. And so we need to make it accessible to everyone. And so that's the reason why I'm writing these children's books, so that kids aren't afraid to ask questions. That's the number one thing. So yeah. Whether it's the technologies that you're talking about or future technologies, we shouldn't be in the position where we're afraid of it. We should be able to at least ask questions like, yeah. What does it do? How can I be involved? Is it safe? Those are the kinds of questions that we want kids to feel empowered to ask.
Yeah. So if the kid in me were still young and not almost 100, I'd be asking, so how does this microphone thing work? You're in Connecticut. I'm in Boston. I guess if I yelled loud enough, you might hear me. But we're able to sit down and chat, and our voices are carried a couple of hundred miles to each other. And then eventually this is going to go out all over the world. How does this little thing make that happen?
It's pretty darn incredible, but there's some basic things that need to happen. First, you know, we think about sound, and sound is a vibration. And mm-hmm. we've got to figure out how to capture that vibration. And then once we've captured it, we need to change that into electricity, and then it goes through the wire, and then it comes out the other side, you know, of a speaker. But you can think of inside of the microphone having something like a balloon. If I were to talk into a balloon, I would feel those vibrations. There's something in the microphone that feels those vibrations. And that's the thing that Jim West discovered, which was the electret. He found something that acts like a balloon. It feels vibrations, but it has a charge. And when it moves up and down, the circuit inside of the microphone can feel that difference. And so it changes those ups and downs, if you will, into electricity. And that's so now the vibration is now converted into sound, into electricity. And so that's kind of the basics of inside of a microphone. And then that needs to go out to a speaker, and a speaker does the opposite. So I put a sound into it, and what that does, what a speaker does, is it makes a sound. So it moves back and forth, and that creates a sound. So essentially you have a balloon that you're talking into, and then you have a balloon that's moving in and out, and it's creating a sound.
When it turns, and we don't need to get too deep because I'll just lose myself. But when it turns into electricity, how on the other end is it, you know, is there a thing on the other end that says, oh, yeah, that piece of electricity sounds like this and that piece sounds like that?
Yeah. So on the other, so there's circuits inside that can speak that language of electricity. So it sees all these ups and downs. The ups and downs being when you say a letter P into the microphone. It sees that letter P as like a hump, and it translate that as in movement on the other side.
Wow.
So there's all circuits inside.
You know, before I got into performing and whatnot, I was in human services working at a school for kids with severe intellectual disabilities. And my job was to bring the kids out into the communities and kind of develop community awareness and whatnot. And we had this big event at the hospital that where the school existed. And we invited a bunch of kids from the local public school in to hear a performance by the Berklee College of Music Brass Quintet.
Nice.
And we got a company to donate balloons.
Wonderful.
And so my kids were there with their balloons, and all the kids from the public school were there with their balloons. And I was really nervous at first because when the trumpet played, there wasn't a whole lot of vibrations. But then we got the French horn and the tuba, and those kids are feeling those vibrations big time.
Yeah, they can. It tickles. They would
yes.
say. Yeah, it's amazing. And that's what's going on in our ear. Our ear, essentially, we have a little balloon in there too. That's how we're able to hear. So those are some of the concepts that, if we can just distill science to very understandable language, like, you know, sound is possible. We're able to register because we employ balloons. Then kids can understand it. They're like, oh, that doesn't seem so foreign. Oh, this machine doesn't seem so foreign. Maybe I can make something like that.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about Jim West? He was obviously a curious guy, liked to take things apart. But was he this extraordinary mind that was destined, or was he somebody that I can imagine I'd like to hang out with?
Well, if you went back, when he was born in the 1930s, he was considered to be more of a troublemaker because he was very rambunctious. He ran around on the farm. He was by the well, under the house. He was places that he shouldn't be. He took a lot of things apart. In fact, he took apart his grandfather's pocket watch. All 105 pieces he took out and he didn't do that because he was malicious. He did that because he wanted to know how it ticked.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he's made this wonderful invention today, those folks who lived on the farm probably didn't see that. They were like, this boy is just get him out of here. But what he was very curious, and that led him to learn about science and to learn about electricity. And eventually he wanted to go off and go to college. Now, this is in the 1950s, and his parents actually tried to talk him out of going to college. Jim is African-American. At the time, they knew people who had studied science but couldn't be employed in laboratories because of segregation. So they didn't want him to waste the family's money to go to college and never be employed in the thing that he studied. But Jim was very, very driven. He loved science so much that he figured out how to get to college. He lived with relatives so he didn't have to pay rent. He repaired television so he could pay for his expenses and went to school. And he went to Temple where he learned physics. And it was by fortune that when he was at school, he saw an advertisement for an internship at Bell Laboratories. And that internship gave rise to him working on a project, and that's where he got the idea for the microphone, and that's why we have this wonderful microphone today. So it's a very driven, rambunctious little boy who created something that we all can't live without.
Yeah. I'm picturing a parent with a kid who has a lot of extra energy. and knows that there's a lot going on with the kid, that they're really bright. But, boy, we're getting really frustrated at school because the teachers don't quite know how to deal with him. And he's a little disruptive. But this would be a great book to sit down with that kid and read together and just to give the kid a lot of hope, I hope.
I think so. I hope so. I hope that they see their reflection. It's like, mm-hmm. look, it may not be working out right now, but if you just hang on, your genius is going to be evident and you're going to figure out what you're supposed to do. Like mm-hmm. I have someone in my life who's very, very rambunctious and he has a lot of energy, but he's figured out that he's very good at putting things together. And so we send him parts. Okay, here you go. I remember when he was a little boy, my nephew, when he was a little boy, I used to save the roll for paper towels. Mm-hmm. And I used to give him all those rolls and I would give him masking tape. And he'd be like, oh, cool, this is great. And then he'd go build stuff. So it's up to us as the adults in kids' lives to figure out where their genius is and then give them the stuff so that they can succeed.
Yeah, I love that. It's so very, very important. You were mentioning really early on that when you're teaching, you were noticing that there are a lot of kids that weren't in your class. Who wasn't there? Who did you want to get in those classes?
Well, I taught engineering for a long time, and I didn't see very many women.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see very many women, and I certainly didn't see too many kids of color.
Uh-huh.
And I know from my own background as a person as African American, everybody is good at science because mm-hmm. everybody takes stuff apart. So what happened? Where are all the girls and where are all the kids of color? And so that's the reason why I wanted to go back and inspire, you know, so the generation that's there already, you know, I can do my best to give them good instruction as an engineering student, but I need to go back and encourage kids to have them love science so that it's unmovable, unshakable, so that they don't get separated out and so that they will be in those classes in the future.
Well, our family has done our part. We have my niece is a young Latina who is a semester away from graduating with her degree in biomedical engineering.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good work.
Very, very, very proud of her. She's awesome. Tell me, Spark, Jim West's electrifying adventure in creating the microphone. It's out there in the world. Are you working on any new picture books for kids?
Yeah, so this book, Spark, is the first in a series of Black innovators. So there's another one that's coming out next year, October 2026, thereabouts. And it's about Gladys West. Now, she's not related to Jim West, although they have the same last name. And Gladys West is a mathematician. She's in her 90s, and she had a role in creating GPS. So what she did is she helped to figure out the shape of the Earth. That was very, very key in order for us to know where we're located. We know where we are, north, south, east, and west, but we don't know how high up we are. And mm-hmm. that is information that we can get from the shape of the Earth. So she was instrumental in that. And then and I have other more explainer type picture books that are coming out. One that is called There's the Rub, and it's about all the places that we experience friction from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. So brushing our teeth, tying our shoe, the crunch of snow, all these things happen because of friction. So it's just a way for kids to have a deeper appreciation for the science that's around them.
That's very, very cool. I love it. Boy, what a neat trajectory your career has had. Scientists and now sharing science with kids in picture books. If there's an author out there or a scientist, and what advice would you give them to, kind of go and make their dreams happen?
If they're going into writing books, you're saying?
Sure, yeah.
Well, I think I had to evolve in order to be a picture book writer because the person who used to write scientific papers, you know, as I mentioned, I would hide behind those big words and it's all about bluster and how much you know. But when you're writing books for kids, you actually have to be a little bit more vulnerable and say, what do I really know? And can I understand? Can I explain this in a way that young people can understand it? So it was a 10-year evolution from the person who used to be writing scientific papers and giving scientific lectures to having a brain where I'm getting back in touch with being a beginner and understanding how would people understand this and how can I explain this in a way that anybody can understand this. So I would say that if someone's a scientist and they want to do picture books, then you have to get in touch with your own inner kid and don't use jargon and see how you can explain it in a way, distill it in a way that's meaningful to kids.
Yeah, that's great advice. Boy, there was a question that I wanted to ask you, and it seems to have danced off into the mists.
That's how it is.
tell everybody, please, where they can go to find out more about Spark, Jim West's electrifying adventure in creating the microphone, and find out more about you.
Well, the book is out. It's published by Candlewick, so you can find it in all places where you buy books. Independent booksellers would love to have you pick up a book from them. And about me, well, I'm easy to find. AnisaRamirez.com is my website. I have a series of videos that I've created when I was a professor at Yale that explain science. I have a podcast called Science Underground, which is sunsetted, but there's about 40 episodes that explain science in 2 minutes. So if you're interested in learning about how leaves change color, or a little bit about Jim West, or how this football is able to stay in the air. I have a whole series of explainers about that.
Awesome. And I did just remember the question I wanted to ask you. I know that you lectured and were teaching college students. Have you had a chance to go out to a classroom, read your book, share the book with younger kids and get their questions?
Oh yeah, I got a chance when the book came out, and for the last couple of months I've been reading the book to different classrooms, and sometimes I would just point out what the pictures are saying, not necessarily needing to read it, just because I want to just get to the main point, and it's many pages. But kids seem to love it, and one kid said, "Hey, I want to be like Jim. I want to take stuff apart." And I said, "Great. Now make sure you get your parents' permission to take things apart." But we did the hard part, which is to convince them that they, you know, to get them in touch with their curiosity.
That's great. We've had a really fascinating time speaking to the author of Spark, Jim West's Electrifying Adventure in Creating the Microphone. Our guest has been Anisa Ramirez. Anisa, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it was such a pleasure talking to you, Jed.
Are you looking for a creative way to bond with your kids? Let me tell you all about Drawing with Your Kids, the ultimate destination for artistic adventures. Join us as we dive into the wonderful world of children's books with renowned illustrators guiding you step by step. From beloved characters to whimsical scenes, unleash your imagination and create cherished memories together. Whether you're a seasoned artist or just picking up a pencil, there's something for everyone at Drawing with Your Kids. Please visit our website, readingwithyourkids.com, and click on the Drawing with Your Kids link at the top of the page and let the creativity flow. Drawing with Your Kids, where every stroke brings stories to life. Join us right now from New York City. Our guest is here today to celebrate Recordable Book Buddy. He's one of the co-founders. Please welcome to the show, Zephyrus White. Zephyrus, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk to you about the Book Buddy and about books.
I'm excited to have you on, too. You are officially the first Zephyrus who's been on Reading with Your Kids. We have over 2,300 episodes out there in the world. You are Zephyrus number one.
You'd be surprised how many times I'm the first Zephyrus somewhere. No, I had kind of artistic hippie parents, and so I've got an unusual name.
Yeah. I don't think I met my first Jed until I was fourth or fifth grade.
And yeah,
other than Jed Clampett on TV, that it was me and him. That was the only people I knew with this name.
Well, we can avoid some of the confusion that all the Mikes and Johns have places. Yeah,
absolutely. Although a lot of people they just can't. It's only three letters, but they just can't. Is it Jet? You're named after a plane? It's like, no, I'm Jet. It's Jet. It's easy.
Yeah. Well, we both have our struggles with the names, I guess.
I don't think I've ever said this on, and we'll get to Recordable Book Buddy very shortly. But I had a high school in Buffalo, New York. I did educational magic shows for almost 40 years full time. And I had a high school from Buffalo call me one day and they said, "Hey, you're going to be in the air. We've heard, like to book you to come and perform for our kids." And I go, Okay, I've done a couple of high schools, usually elementary school, but sure, we'll take the challenge and got the date set and everything and got the contract ready. And the principal, when we got everything set, he goes, oh, my kids are going to be so excited to meet you. And I'm thinking, how do they – I mean, I'm well-known, but teachers, but kids and high – are you sure? Oh, yeah, they love your movies. And I said, oh, wait a minute. Who do you think I am? Oh, you're Jet Li. Jet Li.
Oh, no.
I go, oh, your kids are going to be very disappointed when they meet me. So we canceled that booking. So tell us about Recordable Book Buddy.
Yeah, so the Book Buddy is a little device that my partner and I invented. It's about the size of a ruler, since your listeners can't see it right now, but it attaches to the back cover of any children's picture book. It has 21 buttons and allows you to record yourself reading the book, one page to each one of these buttons. Then once your voice is captured in the Book Buddy, the special child in your life can just open up a book, press a button, and hear you read to them anytime they want, even when you can't be together.
Wow, that's very, very cool. Technology is amazing.
It is amazing. It's also, you know, it's funny because the Book Buddy definitely is technology, but we kind of view it as a way to escape technology, too. It was like, it doesn't require any apps or any peripherals or microphones or screens or anything, just a real physical book. So we kind of look at it as a way to use technology to escape technology, which, you know, kids spend so much time on screens these days.
Yeah. When I was good, because I did those magic shows, I was on the road a lot, usually only one week a month.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was away, I would call home and read to my kids, which got expensive because they're long distance calls. So I would record on a cassette tape and my wife would play it. This is so much easier. And I think much more personal. The kid gets a little bit of control.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that because that was kind of the origin, the little seed of the idea for the Book Buddy, like 40 some years ago when I was a kid. Books were such a huge part of my family's life. And my grandma lived quite a ways away and couldn't see us all that often. But she did the same thing. She recorded herself on an old cassette tape, reading children's books, and then would send it off to my sister and I. And we'd get so excited when that package came and could listen to grandma read to us. And then, you know, fast forward 4 decades, my sister has kids of her own. And we got grandma's tapes out thinking this will be great. They can hear their great grandma read books to them. But I don't know if you tried to play any of those old cassette tapes, but they just degrade and it was unintelligible. So that was kind of the germ of the idea for the Book Buddy.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I haven't seen a cassette tape in an awfully long time.
Yeah, no, they're hard to find. I don't know what you would even play it on now either. Yeah.
Exactly. I have, not in view, but I have a whole bookcase full of magic videos and DVDs and
stuff. Oh, yeah.
A wonderful library of knowledge, but I don't have any way to play it anymore.
Well, you know, and that's another thing that we thought a lot about when we were designing the Book Buddy here, because technology does go out of date, and then, you know, your old DVDs, your old VHS, you can't play them anymore. But, you know, the Book Buddy, it just needs 3 AAA batteries and then the book. So it's not going to go out of date. It doesn't matter how much technology advances. It's still going to work 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the line.
Yeah. Now, the Book Buddy is, are you able to use it again and again? Is it just one Book Buddy per book, or can you re-record over?
You can re-record as many times as you like. Like when we initially designed it, kind of envisioned it being, you know, almost a legacy piece that you'd have a special book and carry it on, maybe pass it on to your children, could pass it on to their children, but it absolutely can be re-recorded for as many books and as often as you want to.
Wow, very cool. Very cool. And what's the sound quality? Because I know I listen to Sirius XM in the car and it's fantastic, and I can listen to one, turn on a channel in Boston and listen to it all the way out to California, and it's great. Anytime I turn to AM radio in the car, I can't listen. That the sound quality is horrendous.
Yeah, no, the sound quality is pretty good. I've got it attached to Chris Hotton's We Have a Plan.
Uh-huh.
I think I've got some recorder on here.
It's not picking up that well, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it could be the microphone here with my phone, but right. Yeah, no, the sound quality the sound quality is good enough to pick up all of the nuances and, you know, what makes each person's voice unique when they read a book.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody's out here listening and they're thinking about picking up, and hopefully you're going to check out Recordable Book Buddy. If you're reading the book and the book makes you laugh, don't re-record over that.
Absolutely.
Don't think I got to do it. It's perfect. I broke character. Leave that in. I listen to audiobooks all the time. My favorite are when the author is reading it and they get to a section and you just know they forgot that they wrote that. Because as they're reading it, they're going, oh, no. I love that.
Absolutely. It's the best because it has that, it makes it real and it has that connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me, you mentioned that the idea sprang up 40 years ago, but there's a lot of steps between having an idea when you're a kid and making it come to life.
Absolutely. So, you know, it'd been kicking around in my head for a long time, but I didn't have the technical ability to make it happen. So, you know, I just kind of filed it in the back of the head with a bunch of other ideas. And then it was actually during the pandemic, and I was reading this Shush, We Have a Plan book, you know, and there's three little characters in there. And I, of course, did my own special voices for those when I was reading to my niece. And then one day I heard my mom reading the book, and it was like a completely different book because she did her own special voices. Then a few days later, I heard my partner reading to her son, same book, completely different book. So I started talking to her, Arden, my co-founder, about this idea. And I was like, you know, I just don't really know how to make it happen. It seems like it should be doable, but I don't know where to start. Well, Arden used to be an engineer in the Navy. And she was like, I used to design chips for fighter jets. I can design that. And so we started working on it together. You know, during the pandemic, we had plenty of time and did the designs, got some prototypes made, tested it, and then started up the business.
That's fantastic. Wow. From chips for fighter jets to books. What a cool journey.
Yeah, she's an eclectic person. She's got a pretty interesting journey through life.
Oh, very cool. Now, tell us the bit, you know, we got people out here and they're going, okay, this sounds cool, but it's like $75. I can't afford it.
Yeah, no, it was very important for us to keep it affordable. It's $27.95, so it's not too expensive. And, you know, the amount of use you're going to be able to get out of it with the kid. And like I said, we view it as kind of a memento that you could keep and carry on into adulthood and, you know, capture those memories.
Yeah. Yeah. And how durable is it? You know, we talk here on the podcast about board books and, you know, how much kids love to chew board books and like really consume the book. Is this something that can be dropped and banged around?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's made out of plastic here, but it's all one piece. So there's, it would be hard to break it, I think, or to damage it.
Yeah.
It's pretty sturdy.
And I can see a 5-year-old loving this and keeping it. And then when that 5-year-old gets to be like 11 or 12, thinking of some kind of mischievous ways to use that technology and maybe in their classroom.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you absolutely could. There's all kinds of uses for it that we'd never really, really imagined. We sold some to these high school students who were using it with their yearbooks. You know, like in my day, at the end, people would write a little note in the yearbook. Well, they attached a book buddy and had their classmates record a little message as part of the yearbook. So,
wow.
Yeah, we're hearing all kinds of different uses people are putting it to.
Yeah. Now, are you thinking about doing alternative uses for the technology, maybe a greeting card kind of thing, or?
I mean, we have kicked the idea around a little bit. There are some recordable greeting cards, and, you know, the real, our, our heart is in the literature and the books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what makes this really special to us, I mean, yes, it's a product that we're selling, but, you know, books were such a huge part of my development as a child into a man and just my connection with my family. And so helping children connect with the parents and the adults in their life and develop a love of literature, you know, that's what really gets me excited about the Book Buddy. So that's where we mostly focus our energy.
Yeah. You know, there's little that can replace snuggling up with your kid on the couch, reading a book together. But if you can't be there in person, this would be a nice way to continue that tradition.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we never intend it to be a replacement. It's supposed to be an addition. So you read to your kids as often as you can. But then if you have to work the late shift, you know, the Book Buddy can take up a night for you.
Yeah. Where can people find out more about Read to Make Book Buddy, a recordable Book Buddy?
Yeah, it's you can go to our website, which is recordablebookbuddy.com. You can pick up a Book Buddy there. It's also available all the major online retailers. And we're in over 140 independent bookstores, which I'm really proud of because they're like the front line of getting literature out there.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, really is. Awesome. Any other products on the planning stages?
We've got a few ideas kicking around in the back of the head, but they're not quite ready to unveil yet.
Okay, awesome. Well, we've had a great time speaking to the co-founder of Recordable Book Buddy. Our guest has been Zephyrus White. Hey, Zephyrus, thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Before we invite our guest into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org, clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly joy maker. The joy makers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a joy maker. Join us right now from the great state of Wyoming. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new picture book. It's called I See Superheroes Everywhere. Please welcome to the show, Casey Becker. Hey, Casey, how are you?
I'm making it.
You're making it.
I got a one-year-old who's going through a lot of teething, and she's on a sleep regression. So mama's on a sleep regression. Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. You could squeeze a podcast in.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Mamas can do a lot of things.
That's absolutely right. Moms, that's one place you see superheroes is when you're looking at a mom.
Agreed.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the book.
So I wrote this children's book to prevent the bullying of children who have special needs.
Mm-hmm.
The idea just kind of came to me one night as I was just kind of lying in bed. I don't know, just reflecting on things through my life. And I remember an incident when I was a kid of watching a kid who had special needs get bullied. And I just felt that conviction. And I was like, you know, what could I have done, or what can I do maybe to prevent something like that from happening again? And it just kind of, it came onto my heart, like God put it on my heart that you should write a children's book, like, you know, nip it in the bud before it even happens. And it just kind of flowed, if you would, out of my brain. I got my little Samsung Note out and I started, you know, writing everything I had in my head and my little stick figure images and just brainstorming, if you would. And I text my husband, who was at work at the time. And I said, you know, I have this great idea. I really want to write a children's book to prevent the bullying of children who have special needs. Like, I'm thinking about this incident that happened when I was young, and he's like, you should do it. You know, very supportive of the idea. And sure enough, you know, 6 months later, I rolled. Like, I was on it.
Awesome. It's now you were sharing with me,
before we started recording that you served in the military, and I think I read somewhere your husband also served. Yes. It sounds like you have a warrior spirit, a protective spirit inside of you.
I'm not going to disagree with you. When my son was first born, it was like this really weird innate protective. I feel like maybe all moms kind of go through that, right? You just feel like you need to protect this tiny innocent soul. And I don't know. I feel that same protective nature when I see other children, but more so even when I see children who have special needs. I'm like, please, like, stand around them, you know, wrap my arms around them. Like, how can I protect you, you know, especially in situations where I do witness, you know, that bullying happening, or when I hear a story about it happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
have you always had this affection for kids with special needs, or empathy?
Oh, yeah.
Kids with special needs?
Yeah. My father used to volunteer with children who had special needs. I always looked up to my dad, and I still look up to my dad. And I saw him volunteering with children who have special needs on a horse ranch.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought it was what grownups did, right? They helped children who had special needs. So when the opportunity came, when I was a child, I think it was maybe 8 when I witnessed it, 9, and I started volunteering at a school that was about 10 blocks away from the elementary school that I went to. It was a whole school dedicated to kids who have special needs. And now we have integration, which I think is spectacular. But, you know, back then it wasn't like that. So it was serendipitous.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly familiar. Back in 1989, I was working at a school for kids with severe developmental disabilities. My job was to get them out into the community to do this thing mm-hmm. called inclusion that wasn't cool back then at all. And one of the things that surprised everybody, I the school that I was working at, a great school providing great services, but they didn't think that the kids could be in a typical setting. And
yeah.
So I think they hired me because they said, this guy's a clown. He's going to fail. And we're going to prove that we need to have these kids in a hospital. And it must have been, just as you said, God put it on your heart. I think it was a divine plan, because the program was a huge success to the point
yeah.
where the school systems that were sending the kids to this hospital setting said, well, if they can go out and bring these kids into a typical school and have and do all these things, why are we paying all this money to send them to the hospital? We should bring them back. And they did. And the hospital school closed shortly after that. And all the kids were back in their districts and very happy. And that allowed me to move on and perform full time for 35 years following.
That's wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and one of the things that I was surprised, because I went in with zero knowledge of kids with disabilities, and
yeah.
see that kids were involved in therapeutic horse riding and swimming and all these other things and all the benefits, and the joy that they were getting out of it was just fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this book is 100% timed correctly, yeah. if that makes sense. Like, inclusion is now mainstream, you know, the inclusion of special needs students in the general population classroom, the mainstream classroom, is in full force. And you have a lot of students sitting next to children who may have special needs, and those, I call them abilities. You know, they're not always visible. But I feel like this book kind of bridges the conversation to explain a unique person. You know, mm-hmm. we're all unique, but especially so. Maybe, you know, that child's behavior is not something that another child may be used to witnessing, and they may question it, or in turn may be cruel to that child because they don't understand it. So I have my copy of my book right here. What I did do, you know, vivid colors, you know, draw the eye in. But in the back of the book, there's also these discussion questions.
Uh-huh.
And I left them relatively broad so that as an adult, you have an opportunity to put those questions into context to the child you're explaining it to. So let's say a little boy or, even a little girl, may as well, they're into Transformers. You know, you could take that question and manipulate it to where you could use Transformers as the analogy when explaining special needs to that child. But at least now you have a gateway for that conversation. There's those discussion questions so that as an adult, maybe you have an opportunity to talk to, you know, a child about it in a way that they can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the story that we're going to experience when we're on the couch with our kids. And we froze.
Oh, there we go. It froze on me.
There you go. All right.
Oh, my goodness.
So what is the story that we're going to experience when we're cuddled up on the kids reading I See Superheroes Everywhere?
Sure. This follows the story of the little boy in the front on career day. And he's telling his friend all about what he wants to be when he grows up, and he wants to be a superhero. And why he wants to be a superhero is because he meets other kids and an adult who have special needs, and his perception of them is that they're not disabilities or abilities, they're superpowers. And I think that's just a sweet, innocent way to describe special needs to a child, because through the eyes of a child, everything is so much more beautiful, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it just gives a playful tale, if you would, and explaining those special needs. And I didn't do anything unrealistic when it came to those superpowers. I didn't want, someone who might be vision impaired to have like laser vision, and then a child the next day, walk into class with a child who may have, vision impairment and be like, shoot lasers from your eyes. I didn't want, that perception. But yeah, so it just follows the story of the little boy on front. His name is Casper, although it's not said in the book. And he's just telling, his friend all about the superheroes he meets and why he wants to be a superhero, because he thinks they're so cool.
Did you always aspire to be a children's author?
No, oddly. I love to write, absolutely love to write, but it was just something that came to me. And to be honest, there's going to be two more books that follow this. It just kind of, as I said, it kind of came onto my heart, and now I have an idea for two more books to follow, so it'll be a threequel?
I think most of them just say three book series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That's really wonderful. And so you've caught the children's book bug, and you're excited about writing these other two books. Do you see yourself continuing past this particular series and maybe writing middle grade novels or a chapter book, or are you going to stick with picture books?
I think I'd stick to picture books. I always love to draw, because I did illustrate the book as well. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of joy in developing the characters. Cartoons were new for me, but I had a lot of joy in developing the characters and painting them and just doing all. I think it's a lot more fun. And maybe one day I'll write like an adult novel, but as far as, regular kids books go, I think I'll stick to that younger age.
Awesome. Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about I See Superheroes Everywhere and maybe a little bit more about you.
So my website is myheart-publishing.com. It is available for purchase on Amazon, so that makes it a little bit easier. And a little bit more about me is, I'm very passionate about this, and I really want to see this book in every school, because that's the other thing I didn't mention is on the website, there's additional resources. That's the word I'm looking for. Resources for teachers. So there's a free lesson plan available to teachers so that they can talk about it with their students in class. Kids spend a lot of time in school, and
sure do. Yeah.
Particularly, if they're sitting next to kids who have special needs. I think one, to have a kid understand special needs a little bit better, to perhaps prevent that bullying, to befriend another child who has special needs, and the inverse, a child who has special needs to perceive themselves as a superhero, I think that'd be a great achievement. Yeah. So definitely want it in schools, definitely want it in households, you know, a grandmother reading it to her grandchild, just adults, you know, having those conversations with kids about it. So greatest goal would be every school in the world translated it in every language, because it doesn't just affect, you know, one culture, one ethnicity, one anything. Like, it's definitely not, what's the word I'm thinking of? It doesn't discriminate. It does. Special needs do not discriminate. So I think that'd be the ultimate goal overall.
Well, we hope you are super successful with that and helping to help other kids have empathy for all of their classmates. And I think that's a wonderful goal.
Yeah.
We've had a great time learning about I See Superheroes Everywhere. Our guest has been the author and illustrator, Casey Becker. Casey, thanks for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading With Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. This episode made you smile or gave you something to think about. Please think about sharing the link to the show with someone you love. Please think about leaving a 5-star review. And please subscribe to the show wherever you find your favorite shows. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our wonderful guest, Anissa Ramirez. Please be sure to check out Spark, Jim West's Electrifying Adventures, and Creating the Microphone. Also want to thank Zephyrus White. Check out his recordable book, Buddy. And we want to thank Casey Becker. Please be sure to check out I See Superheroes Everywhere. My team, they deserve a thank you. Chris Daugherty, Fatima Khan. The person who deserves the biggest thanks is my beautiful wife. Thank you so much for all the love and support you give me. Most of all, we want to thank you. Thank you so much for making this world a better, more caring, more empathetic, and kinder place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.